On Tech News Today, Apple launches its music service, Europe agrees to weak net neutrality laws, and the creator of Vine launches a messaging party like it's 1999. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, June 30th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. Tech News Today is a show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. My name is Mike Elgin. Welcome to the show. Our co-anchor today is After Nine's content czar, Joe Panettiere. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Mike. How's your week going so far?
It's going great. Just living off the fat of the land over here. It's been a great week for tech. We got the big Apple Music launch today. We're going to be talking about that in just a second. But before we do, I have to acknowledge my own prescience on something, which is the other day we were talking about the fact that nobody has stepped forward to become the standard for how you exchange business card type of information. I think it was two or three days ago. And I said, I suggested somebody's got to come up with a way or a process for you to have like a smartwatch and simply shake hands. And when you do that, the content data is exchanged between the two people who shake hands. And today, there are reports that Apple has, in fact, been granted a patent for exactly that. Not only will their patent exchange the data with a handshake, they also specify with a high five, so it's like up high, and then you like exchange data through you know, any sort of physical contact. And it's kind of a weird patent. I doubt that Apple will ever put it in anything. They vaguely talk about some sort of wearable device, which clearly is probably the Apple Watch. But what a coincidence that
I don't know, Mike. I think they will do it, and I think they owe you a bit of money on each transaction that happens.
All right, you can represent me in court when I sue Apple, and yeah, we can look forward to that. So anyway, what a weird world that is, the world of sending data through your physical body. Very strange, but it's coming. All right, well, why don't we jump into our top story? Apple launched its Apple Music streaming service about an hour ago. Nathan Olivares-Giles writes for The Wall Street Journal and joins us now to talk about it. Hey, Nathan, how you doing?
Pretty good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Yeah, I tried to download it, and I had a few hiccups, but hopefully most people won't have any problems with it. The main Apple Music streaming service gives you songs on demand and 50 human-curated channels. It sounds to me, and again, I haven't tried it yet, but it sounds to me like a pretty typical service. How is this different from Spotify, RDO, Tidal, Google Play Music, and other streaming services?
Well, really, the major difference is the fact that Apple is trying to pull everything together and create one service that'll compete with everybody, essentially. So they have on-demand streaming like Spotify. They have the radio stations like Pandora. There's a feature called Connect where artists can actually see, or artists can actually upload like music and music videos, things like that directly to fans, which is kind of like SoundCloud a little bit. Really the differentiating feature, the major one to me, is Beats One, which is a 24-hour ad-free live radio station. And that's gonna be free to everybody, whether you subscribe to Apple Music or not. And that's hosted by people like Zane Lowe, who's a famous DJ who came over from the BBC, Ebro Darden, who's a big hip-hop DJ from New York, Julie Adenuga, who is also from the UK. And then they're going to have people like Dr. Dre and Justin Timberlake and Pharrell and Jaden Smith. And they're all going to have their own shows. So there's going to be like musicians anchoring their own weekend shows and stuff like that. So that's really the big differentiating factor, as well as the idea that just for $10 a month, you're kind of getting a mix of Spotify, a mix of Pandora in one place rather than paying 10 bucks a month for each of those services separately.
Hey, Nathan, are there any plans by Apple, or are there any clues that Apple is going to connect the dots between this service and iTunes? So, you know, I listen to streaming music, of course, but I also got a big collection of iTunes songs. Any synergies coming, or are these completely separate islands?
Yeah, these are not completely separate islands. These are definitely going to be integrated. I mean, they're already integrated a little bit. Apple isn't super clear on that, but Eddie Q has said on Twitter and different places that essentially some of the functions of iTunes Match will be included in Apple Music. So right now, all the music that you buy, if you want to stream that from iCloud on your own, you know, iPad, iPhone, Mac, whatever, you can pay $25 a year and Apple will do that in iTunes Match. That is going to be included in Apple Music, as I understand it. I'm still actually trying to get some clarification from them on what the specific details on how that works and if it's exactly the same as iTunes Match or not. Eddie Q did say that they're going to push that up to like 100,000 songs for iOS 9. So there is an ongoing integration between what iTunes does and what Apple Music is. But the way to think about it really is Apple Music is the place where you stream music. iTunes is the place where you buy music. And of course, people are buying music less and less these days, which is why Apple's coming out with a streaming service.
Now, Nathan, you know, you mentioned that the most unusual feature that they have is a radio station. Of course, a radio on the internet, you know, who did that? That guy from Silicon Valley, right? It sounds to me like it may succeed just because it's Apple. And if it does succeed, that's the only reason it'll succeed. These DJs have been on free streaming on the internet for years and nobody cared. Nobody ever went to BBC One to listen to hunt these guys down and to stream this music. I mean, I say nobody. Yeah, they had a few listeners, but really this was not anywhere near the center of the world for people listening to music as all these free streaming services, which, by the way, have even been streamed through iTunes for years and you know, people barely noticed. Do you think that because this is Apple and part of Apple Music and because Apple's making a big deal out of it that will succeed now where it before it failed, or do you think it will continue to fail?
Yeah, I really do think that streaming is the way to get media for, you know, a lot of us nowadays. If you just look at Netflix, more and more of us are turning to Netflix for television and for movies and all of these things. And a lot of younger kids, they never grew up, you know, buying CDs or vinyl records. I grew up buying, you know, CDs and vinyl records. My dad, he was all vinyl records, right? You know, cassette tapes. Nowadays, my cousins who are in elementary school, they're not doing that. They're actually streaming all these different things, granted through their parents' subscriptions and then pocketbooks. But this is kind of the new normal for a lot of people. And I think that is a shift that's taking place and is going to continue. Now, what we've seen so far is that music streaming has been relatively niche in comparison to Netflix, which is in about like half the homes in the United States of America. So there's a ton of room for this to grow. And Apple has that marketing muscle to get it out there, to raise the awareness of streaming in general, to let people know it's there and to get people on board. So I think you're right. I think Apple really essentially isn't necessarily creating anything new here, but they're bringing a bunch of great ideas together. They're offering it in a convenient way at the same price as everybody else. And you get a little bit more bang for your buck here. And, you know, that's a pretty powerful thing. And it's also just built into the included music app on an iPhone. So, you know, if you buy an iPhone, you're not yet subscribed to Spotify or Audio or Pandora or any of that stuff. The first 3 months are free. You're probably going to give it a shot. And maybe you'll stick around. At least that's what Apple's hoping, right?
Yeah. Hey, Nathan, when I think of DJs and that art, sort of speak, I really think about cars and drive time radio, whether it's satellite or terrestrial. Is Apple going to do anything special here to get the Apple Music streaming service promoted into cars? And basically, instead of me manually having to stream it into my car, there's going to be some sort of turnkey approach so that these DJs are front and center every time I sit down in my car?
You know what? I'm not aware of anything like that, but they do have their CarPlay, dashboard system coming up pretty soon. So that would make sense. I don't know, you know, if they're going to do anything to promote it especially different, but it will be built into the music app. So you tap into the music app and that's what you'll see. That's basically, as far as I know, the only way you'll be able to get this into your car. Right now, they don't have a equivalent terrestrial kind of radio broadcast. This is really just an online-only thing. And so far, I mean, I've been listening to Beats One this morning. It sounds really great. Zane Lowe's show is pretty good so far. you know, heard some new stuff, but it's actually kind of one of my biggest love-hate things with Beats Music, and I mean with Apple Music so far. It's a 24-hour live radio channel, and a lot of people are listening on demand. I listen to music on my commute into work and my commute home, but you know what? Maybe I want to listen to Zane's show and I can't listen to it, you know, in the morning. Maybe I have to work. A lot of people are going to on-demand sort of things like podcasts. Just like Mike said, this has been something that's been happening for years. And if you look at, say, NPR, for example, they're doing live broadcasts, but they're also offering the majority of their shows on demand as podcasts. So, you know, Beats One, is it ever going to be on demand? I hope so. It's not yet. Right now, it's just a radio station, which is kind of an old school idea. It's a little bit almost ignorantly romantic on Apple's part, and we'll see if it pans out or not.
I'm pretty curious about this Connect service. It's kind of like Ping on crack. It's like a social network that you, the user, can't join. You have to be a star in order to be on it, but you can share their content and all that kind of stuff. Have you looked at it this morning, and have you learned anything about it new that we didn't know before?
Yeah, I've been looking at it, and it's a little bit of a head-scratcher. I mean, I love the idea of being able to follow musicians that I love and get exclusive songs and music videos in one place. That's a great idea, but you can't interact with any of these artists at all. You just follow them, and you just consume whatever they might feed to you. So, you know, if you're, say, on SoundCloud, you know, you can, like, leave a little comment in the audio stream. You can create your own playlists, and you can really kind of share that with friends. There doesn't really seem to be any true social networking component to Apple Music yet. Even on Spotify, I can create a playlist, share that with my friends in the service, and then even share that publicly. There's no real quite equivalent to that social networking aspect in Apple Music yet. So it's not the ghost of, you know, Ping, the resurrection of that, you know, really honestly mistake at social networking attempt. It's actually less than that. It's not even a true social network. It's a place to follow artists and see their new releases, whether it's something that you have to stream or pay for or whatever, right? And they're really still missing that. That's a big, big feature for Spotify. That's a big, big feature for RDO. And Apple doesn't really quite have an answer for that just yet.
They've improved the social network by removing all aspects of being social. That's brilliant. So, Nathan, how do people get it? And what if people already have Beats, if they're already subscribed to the old Beats Music service? What advice do you have for people who want to try this out?
Well, the first thing is, if you subscribe to Beats today and you like Beats, especially if you have it connected to a Sonos Wi-Fi speaker system, hold off on upgrading to Apple Music right now. The reason being, if you upgrade, if you convert from Beats over to Apple Music, it will cancel your Beats Music subscription, and that means that you're not going to be able to stream music to your Sonos speakers anymore from Beats, because you won't have a Beats account. You'll have an Apple account. Apple and Sonos are working together to get Apple Music streaming to Sonos speakers sometime before the end of the year. I really hope it happens a lot sooner, as a guy who loves Sonos speakers myself. But that's kind of the deal. If you have a Beats account right now, it's going to be converted over to an Apple Music account. If you sign up for Apple Music, you'll still get the first 3 months free, but then after that, it'll be the same $10 a month, right? If you want Apple Music, right now you can only get it on iPhones, iPads, and Macs. On Macs and PCs, it's through iTunes. There's going to be a software update to iTunes 12.2. You just go up into, like, you know, file, software update, and then it'll present you with the opportunity to download the latest version. If you want it on your iPhone or iPad, you actually have to go into the settings app, and then you click general and software update, and then you'll see the download prompt from there. Now, since everyone today is going to be downloading the latest version of iOS, it might take some time. You're going to want to plug your iPhone or iPad in. You're going to, you know, want to wait a while. It might be something that's good to do during your lunch break or whatever, but, you know, it's there. I updated to the latest iOS this morning, and I've been using it, and it didn't take me that long, maybe about 20 minutes, which is actually pretty, pretty good. I mean, in the past, it's taken as long as an hour to upgrade to iOS, the latest version. So, you know, it's pretty standard stuff.
All right. Well, Nathan Oliveira-Skiles is at WSJ.com and on Twitter at NateOG. Thank you so much for joining us today, Nathan.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. We've got more news for you coming right up. But first, let's talk about good food from Blue Apron, our sponsor today. Blue Apron is an awesome company, and the reason is that they make it super, super easy for you to make delicious meals. The way they do that is once a week, they will send you a box. It just comes right to your house. And inside that box is a refrigerated food, all the ingredients you need to make your own food. It's not pre-prepared meals. You make the food yourself. Do it fresh with their fresh ingredients. And this ends up costing you less than $10 per meal. And I'm telling you that every single meal is far better than you're going to find in a restaurant, far healthier, and with really good locally sourced seasonal fresh ingredients with perfectly proportioned. One of the things, you know, there's this thing that some people do where they get baskets of produce, and almost everybody who gets these subscription produce services says it's way too much of the wrong kind of produce, and they end up having the, you know, a bunch of kale that they're not going to use or whatever. With Blue Apron, you get exactly what you need to make these meals, so there's no waste. Each meal is between 500 and 700 calories per serving per person, and it's easy. It's really fun. It's really delicious. It's really healthy. There is no downside to Blue Apron. It's just a fantastic way to have super, super good food at the dinner table that you made yourself. You also learn a lot about how to cook. Once you've made a meal, you keep the recipes and instructions. If you can find the ingredients in your local stores, you can go and then make those things again. And Blue Apron will not send you the same meal twice in the same year. So there's tons of variety. Blue Apron is a better way to cook. You can check out this week's menu and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's right, two meals free just for going to blueapron.com/twit. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of Tech News Today. After 2 years of bickering, the European Union today agreed to a new telecoms law. Highlights include a provision that will ban roaming charges within Europe starting in 2 years, and also a new net neutrality law that goes into effect in April and allows for exceptions that will make the European net less neutral than it could be. Zoya Sheftalovich is a tech reporter for Politico and joins us now. Hey, Zoya, how you doing?
Hey, Mike, I'm doing well, despite the fact that the negotiations finished at about 2:15 overnight, and I was up until then.
I don't understand. It took them 2 years to get to that point. Why stay up late? Might as well go to bed early and finish in the morning. So why did they ban roaming charges, and how will the new roaming system work?
So essentially what they've done is they've introduced a ban that's going to start in June 2017. In the meantime, there's going to be a transitional period from April 2016 until when the ban comes in, when roaming charges are going to be minimal. They're going to be around about 5 cents for a minute, 5 cents for a text, and 5 cents over the top of your regular plan for a megabyte as well. So the reason they've done it is because the EU is huge. There are 28 member states. Some of them are tiny, like Belgium, where I'm coming to you from, and Luxembourg. And so basically, when you go from one place to another, as a lot of people often do, they're racking up giant phone bills, and they're getting bill shock, where they get their bill and they realize they've actually spent all this money that they didn't intend to spend just by checking their email when they're on business in Paris or on a holiday in Spain.
Could you explain the non-roaming charges for us Americans here? Does that mean when I go to Europe, I'm not going to be hit with roaming? Or is this exclusively for people who live in Europe and have European plans?
It is unfortunately just for people who live in the 28 EU states who have plans that belong to one of those 28 states. So anyone who's visiting Europe from anywhere else, unfortunately, won't be able to benefit, because those agreements between those third-party countries and EU country telecom providers, they're done separately to the EU itself.
Now let's talk about net neutrality. How did they fall short of true net neutrality? What is missing here?
Look, there are different views on this one, and it's far be it for me to say what true net neutrality is and isn't. The net neutrality advocates do say that this is falling short. So what they're saying is that because something called zero rating is still allowed, that's not net neutrality. And what zero rating means is that if, for example, you are with a particular telecoms operator, they might offer you as an enticement free access, unlimited and unmetered, to Netflix. Or another operator might offer you unlimited access to Facebook and Twitter and other social media accounts. That's something that the telecoms operators use to compete with one another and to lure customers to their service. The net neutrality advocates say that what this does is actually keeps the caps that people get for their data downloads a month artificially low, because it means that people will, for example, people who love Netflix will just go with a telco who offers free Netflix, and they won't have any real competition within those telecoms markets. So that's really the main issue that people have with the net neutrality provisions. Another issue that people have is surrounding what kind of, so basically there's something called specialized services, which are things like e-health, for example. And under the current laws, the telecoms operators will be able to save or sequester bits of their network for things like e-health and connected cars so that those services get instant internet. At the same time, other internet services won't be able to be generally affected. And that's really the wording that people have an issue with. Is generally a good word, or do we just need to say they can't affect other internet access at all?
Hey, Zoe, what goes on from here, from this point forward? What happens to the bill? Does it have to be approved by any particular government? And if it has to be approved, is there any type of clue as to, A, whether it'll be approved? And if so, when?
Well, this is quite, you know, nothing in the EU is easy. Nothing is just approved. So what we've got from overnight is an agreement in principle between the European Commission, the Council, and the European Parliament. Now they have to go to their respective corners, and particularly Parliament and Council will need to get the rest of the people who are involved to sign off on that deal, because it's a deal between representatives of those bodies. It's not the whole Parliament that's voted, and it's not the whole Council that's voted. What we're hearing is that there is probably going to be support. There will be some changes that might be made before this actually gets drafted into a final regulation. So basically, they've gone to their respective corners, they're discussing it with each other, they'll come back together. We think that somewhere around September is when Parliament will vote on the measures. Council will probably do it sooner. And then we'll actually get something that starts happening after September, when those member states actually get the laws coming through to them individually in all their different languages.
Well, Zoya Sheftalovich is at politico.eu and on Twitter at Zoya Sheff. Zoya, we had a little tiny hiccups with Skype. That's probably the net neutrality not working. I want to thank you so much for hopping on at the last minute and joining us today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Thank you. A Silicon Valley startup backed by Google Ventures and others is getting ready to release 360-degree cameras for virtual reality video. The company is called Jaunt. You probably never heard of it before, but here to tell us all about it is Eric Johnson, who is Recode's Associate Editor for Gaming. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you so much for coming back. Now, can you tell us about this Jaunt rig? Let's start with the hardware that Jaunt is going to be selling.
Sure. So in general terms, a virtual reality camera is, if you think about a normal camera, which is shooting in one direction, and it's a frame that the director can control so that the end result is a movie or a TV show, and you only see what the director wants you to see, a virtual reality camera shoots in 360 degrees. So it's shooting all over the place. The idea being that if you have access to one of these VR headsets, you can then look around anywhere and see, look in pretty much any direction you feel like.
Hey, Eric, any clues as to what are the potential applications here? Like, who would use the camera to develop this type of content? And then part two is, who would consume the content?
Right. The answers to both those questions are pretty overlapping. On the one hand, there's entertainment, right? So there's a lot of people who are experimenting with, you know, can you make a narrative in VR? Or right now, there's a lot of people working in documentaries. Can you make, for example, a nature documentary in virtual reality? And on the other hand, there's a lot of potential marketing applications. So, for instance, Jaunt, the company I read about this morning, they in the past have worked with the North Face. And so the idea being that maybe, you know, you go to, you're thinking about buying, or you're at the mall, and, you know, you're not really thinking about buying like a winter coat, but then you put on this headset, you watch this really awesome, you know, 360-degree movie of about people climbing mountains, and all of a sudden you have this strange desire to buy what they're wearing, you know? So the idea being that maybe it can influence people in ways that, you know, an old-fashioned, you know, a billboard type ad or a normal video ad couldn't do.
Now, Google has its Jump system, which they announced at Google I.O., and this, of course, is something that Google's on board with because they're one of the backers. What are some of the problems that Jaunt hopes to solve around VR that Google isn't solving already with Jump? And can you talk a little bit about the fact that Google is happy to both support Jaunt and also its own Jump system?
Exactly. This is where the article came from originally. It was me just thinking, like, you know, well, that's weird. it was something where, basically, with Jaunt's new camera that they announced today, which is codenamed Neo, they're making it really clear that they are just really going for the high-end virtual reality movie market. And obviously, it's still a very nascent thing, right? It's not like there's a gigantic market there yet. There's not very many people who have these headsets. But what they're trying to do is position themselves so that they're ready to, especially for things like the marketing applications or for the filmmakers who are doing, you know, really, really expensive or elaborate stuff, that they have the camera that those people want, that's sort of the top-of-the-line machine, and that's really the easiest to use. Whereas Google, what they're doing with Google Jump is really looking maybe more at the mass market implications at the lower budget opportunities. So Google Jump, the camera that they announced at I.O., it's a partnership with GoPro, and it's basically just a thing that holds a bunch of off-the-shelf GoPro cameras in an array, just in a 360-degree array, and then their software, which is called Assembler. You can see there's the rig, and they have software that then, after the fact, stitches it together to make a cohesive image. So there's kind of the differences there, is where one might be a more casual experience, the other might be, well, for telling the story or for capturing a live music concert or for making an expensive marketing video.
Hey, Eric, are there any clues on pricing here in terms of how much Jaunt will cost? Is this a consumer price thing, or is it really for professionals and larger media companies?
I asked, and Jaunt is not saying anything about how much the camera costs. They're only giving it to their partners. They're not planning to put it on sale for consumers at all. Google is, in some fashion, going to be distributing its cameras more widely, but there's not yet a clear sense of price. Just the sheer number of GoPros involved there, I mean, that's several thousand dollars. In the short term, Google and Jaunt are both going to be distributing their cameras to partners. So Jaunt to its clients that it works with, Google to some of the top YouTubers and other people who have reached out to it, people it works with on the video side.
All right. Well, Eric Johnson gets paid to play video games at Recode.net, and you can follow him on Twitter at HeyHeyESJ. Thank you so much for joining us today, Eric.
That's great. Thank you.
All right. Microsoft and AOL have agreed to move Microsoft's display, mobile, and video ads to AOL. Microsoft will continue to sell search ads. The change affects 9 markets, including the United States, and Microsoft's 1,200 or so advertising staff will be given offers to join AOL. The deal also cements a 10-year agreement for AOL to use Microsoft's Bing search engine, which replaces Google. And AOL is, of course, recently acquired by Verizon for $4.4 billion. Joe Panettiere, it sounds like AOL is very serious about becoming an online advertising powerhouse.
Yeah, you know, very interesting in that AOL is relevant again, part one. And part two, if you rewind a little bit, you may recall that under Steve Ballmer, there was a point when Ballmer said ad systems and advertisers would be more important to Microsoft than software developers, which, you know, really were Microsoft's bread and butter customers in the early days of the company and in the middle times of the company. So it's really interesting to see Microsoft's current CEO stripping away things that haven't worked. I think Microsoft had written down that ad system by about $6 billion. They acquired it, then wrote off a big loss on it. And now AOL is picking it up, and they're going to run wild with it, I would expect.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that I detect a larger strategy here. And I think the strategy is that with anybody who's in the online advertising business has to get into the contextual advertising business, which means you have to gather and harvest personal data from users. And Microsoft, I think, would like to be in a position to be able to hammer away at Facebook and Google, especially Google, at their harvesting of personal data the way Apple does right now. And they're trying to, you know, it's not super profitable for them anyway, so they might as well wash their hands of the whole business and then go after Google for invading everybody's privacy the way Apple does. So it's going to be, my prediction is going to be both Apple and Microsoft going after that line increasingly as we go forward into the world of contextual advertising. Well, in product update news, Microsoft released a new Windows 10 preview for PCs yesterday. The new build introduces the browser codenamed Spartan as the Microsoft Edge browser. The OS has enhancements to the user interface, the Cortana virtual assistant, the Photos app, and much more. To the best of our knowledge, Microsoft is still on track to ship Windows 10 on July 29th. What do you think of this Edge browser, formerly codenamed Spartan, Joe Panettiere? Do you think this is going to enable Microsoft to move beyond the bad reputation they got from Internet Explorer?
I think the key there, Mike, is they're going to have to make sure that they've got a really strong cross-platform browser story. Because if they just lock it to Windows 10 and evangelize it with Windows 10, users, there's so many of us out there now that are not going to be on Windows 10 when it comes out, at least for the first few months or maybe even the first year, give or take. So as long as they make sure that they've got a great cross-platform browser story, I think they're in the game. If they really make this about, hey, you got to use Windows 10 to get the best browser experience, then I think they have some issues.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. Well, in mergers and acquisitions news, Cisco intends to buy the cloud security company OpenDNS for $635 million. Cisco had been an investor in the company. OpenDNS turns Cisco into a software as a service provider around security and on any device, too. Joe Panettiere, are you familiar with OpenDNS and exactly what they do?
I am, actually. When they were founded and when they received their first investments, I had actually interviewed their executive team. And what's really interesting here, Mike, is a lot of the SaaS and cloud world, the customer is usually the end user. You know, it's the corporate IT executive who is consuming this stuff. In OpenDNS's case, they've built this great ecosystem of companies that work with them to put their technology in front of end customers. So I think this is a great move by Cisco.
Oh, good. It sounded like one to me, and it sounds like something that everybody's got to be really good with as a security element in the new world of cloud computing. Well, in news you can lose, one of the creators of Vine is building a free-form mobile social app called Byte, of all things. The idea is to recreate the free-form creative tools and also the trashy, fluorescent, and random aesthetic of the late 1990s. It's kind of hard to explain, so let's take a look at their wacky video. All right, so we're seeing lots of fluorescent colors and a message typed in. It's kind of like layout tools, Joe Panettiere, where you're basically going to be sending a message, like a messaging app type thing, but you do some basic, and in this case, very cheesy layout.
Yeah, and the music almost sounds like it's care of a John Hughes movie from the 80s. Yeah. So we've got a 90s look with an 80s beat going on, which is pretty nice.
Yeah. All right, so the demo here is they've added some text. Now they're adding a live, I guess that's an animated GIF. So you can cobble together different elements. The idea is that you cobble together words and videos and pictures and other elements, and then you send it off as a message to whoever you want, just like any other messaging service. You can send it through Twitter or whatever. And I think the idea is to have more free form and creativity and essentially make your messages look like, I don't know, MySpace? I don't know. I really don't.
I don't know who has time for this. That's the thing. But I'm always amazed by people finding more time to do a lot of nothing with their mobile devices. So what do I know?
I'm sure that when this person and his co-founders suggested Vine, we're going to come out with a video service that only lasts a few seconds and that's all you can do with it. You know, I'm sure people went, why would anybody want that limitation? Turns out Twitter would want it because they acquired the company. There it is. You saw it here first. It entered private beta yesterday and should become available for all iOS users in July with an Android version coming later in the year. We got an email from Sam Abwelsamid about our coverage Friday of the reports that two self-driving cars nearly crashed into each other in Silicon Valley. Those reports turned out to not be true, and that was really the story that we were reporting. But Sam said the company, I pronounced it Delphi, and he said, no, it's pronounced Delphi, which is, I appreciate the correction and pronunciation. I actually lived in Greece for a long time, and everybody there calls the archaeological site Delphi, and I think I just got it used to saying it like that. Second, he said, I mentioned that the company is headquartered in the UK, and he wrote, quote, while the business is based in the UK for tax reasons, the engineering headquarters are in Troy, Michigan. And like other automakers and suppliers, they have an outpost in Silicon Valley where they can test autonomous vehicles without the vagaries of weather. unlike California. We have lots of rain in Michigan. I don't even know what rain is. I don't know what you're talking about. Delphi actually began in the mid-1990s when GM spun off its in-house parts division, which were originally under the Delco brand. I didn't know any of that. So, Sam, I want to thank you for those corrections, and I'll try to say it right from now on. All right, if you have a comment or a correction for us, just send email to tnt@twit.tv, and I thank you for all of your mail. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Steve Porch in Austin, Texas, who posted this picture on Twitter. He watches the show on the bus, apparently. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup or your commute and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. Joe Panettiere, I want to thank you so much for co-anchoring today. I really love all your insights. It's so great because every time, you know, very often we bring up a story and you've interviewed the CEO or somebody. You've interviewed so many people in the industry. So it's a really great insight, and I thank you for co-anchoring today.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me, and I'll see you next Tuesday.
All right, see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye. Well, you can subscribe to Tech News Today on your favorite podcast app, or you can choose some other way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. If you're ever near Petaluma, come on in and watch us as part of our studio audience. Just send email to tickets@twit.tv. And please join our Google Plus community. Search Google Plus for Tech News Today, and you'll find us there. You can also follow me on all the social networks at elgin.com. Also, don't miss Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every single weeknight. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the Tech News Today. This show is produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.